after a win, the first one under Zach Taylor for the Bengals in 2019. I'm Lindsay Patterson with Tyler Dragon and Kareem Ugazar. He's back with us. Kareem, it's been a minute.
Yeah, it's been a few weeks. It's good to be back. It's been busy with college basketball and some other things, but I apologize for being away from you guys for the last few weeks, but it's always good to be back with you guys.
How's shooting basketball different than shooting NFL games? I always wondered that.
That's a good question. Basketball, you really have to push yourself to diversify your images. It's a lot of repetition, so you gotta, you can submit a dozen shots of dunks and layups, but then you really have to kind of get creative and push yourself for different angles, different types of pictures. Also, in basketball, you have to contend in any sport, but in basketball, you really have to contend with a referee blocking you, and it happens a lot, and it's a bit frustrating. But after almost a decade now shooting, you realize that, you can't control it. You got to just kind of move on. Football is, especially NFL football, is much faster. I have a little bit of experience shooting NBA basketball, which is very, very fast, but I, primarily shoot college basketball. So the NFL game is a lot faster. I do prefer to shoot football over basketball. That's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys, before we get started, I have to tell you this. This is when you are thinking too much about the offseason in the NFL draft for the Cincinnati Bengals. I had a dream last night, and it pretty much lasted the whole entire dream because it's really long, and I'm not going to get into super detail. But my dream was the Bengals had the first pick, which is pretty realistic, but everyone keeps telling me that they're really going to mess it up, that, they don't trust them making the first round pick. And I had a dream they drafted a linebacker with the first pick. And I had a dream for all 32 teams of who they picked. And I said, Joe Burrow's off the board. Joe Burrow's off the board. And the Bengals picked Joe Burrow in the second round.
Wait, what? So did the Bengals draft the second coming of Ray Lewis, that linebacker, with the number one pick?
It got number one pick, and I'd never heard of the guy in my life. They got the linebacker, and I was like, this is terrible.
Well, and Joe Burrow was still available?
He was still available.
Top pick in the second round?
It's my life.
Your dream was playing with your emotions.
But I will give you this. Linebacker is an area of need.
They do.
100%.
Could you imagine, though, if they did pick a linebacker in the first round? I mean, that would be absolutely brutal. Well, so,
Bengals don't really draft linebackers high in the last little while. So, and you can tell by the linebacker play on the field.
Guys, it's just a lot of football with me this week, and even in my dreams. After that first win, though, the Cincinnati Bengals get their first win. And I think what's really impressive about this is how disciplined they looked. They had that one penalty. It was kind of weak on Auden Tate for the block in the back. But other than that, they looked pretty good in their win number one.
Yeah, especially the defense. For them not allowing a touchdown, only two field goals. Carlos Dunlap, AFC defensive player of the week, tied a career high, three sacks. The defensive line played exceptionally well, and it affected the entire defensive unit. That was probably their best game of the season. And on offense, what can you say about Andy Dalton? Coming back from a three-game hiatus and him helping the Bengals get their first win, and on top of that, breaking records in the process. So it was a good feel-good win for the Bengals, for them to knock that monkey off their back. 0-11, we all know the records, the bad records they set with that losing streak. But for them to get a win, it's good for just their mental mindset.
And let's think about this for a second. We've been talking about how the defensive line is among the strongest units on the roster, and we've been waiting for it for 13 weeks. And then finally, the defensive line was able to play with a lead. And so then they can kind of just pin their ears back and go after the quarterback and put a lot of pressure on. And then I think that's what we've seen, especially like in passing down situations or in third and long. Sam Hubbard and Carlos Dunlap, Carl Lawson really putting on pressure, and they have a lead. Let's protect it. Let's get after it a little bit. And so it was a big day for the defensive line unit.
And I think in the last 3 weeks, we actually talked to Zach Taylor about this. And credit to Zach Taylor. I want to give a quick shout out to him, because after the game, he came up to Tyler in the press conference and said, hey, I promised you I'd come on the podcast. And he allowed us to take a few minutes of his time on Tuesday on an off day to talk about that. And we actually mentioned the defense. Out of 10 quarters, they've only allowed one touchdown. And from the beginning of the season, how historically bad they looked. And yes, we talked about the linebacker room, and they cut Preston Brown, and you have guys like Jermaine Pratt getting reps. And just the secondary in general, and when you're superstars, when you have have guys like Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap, and even Sam Hubbard and the return of Carl Lawson definitely make a difference on the defensive side, and that's huge. And Zach Taylor mentioned, you know, the defense looked good the last 3 weeks. The offense is finally helping them out, and we saw that in the Jets game.
Yeah, the defense has been the genesis behind their improvement over the last 3 weeks. The Bengals as a whole, they've looked better, and at this point in the season, it's baby steps. Yeah. I mean, when you're 0-11 and you get your first win, you're just trying to get, you know, small victories here. You're not going to the playoffs. You're going on vacation December 29th, right after that game. So you want to finish the season strong, and week 13, that was the first step.
Yeah, and I think when you look going forward for this team, and a lot of fans out there, they felt a little indifferent about the first win. Like, look, a lot of them want the number one draft pick. They want to move on from this season and just scrap it as a whole. But when you look at this team in general, going to the locker rooms after wins and losses, they want to win. They want to get something out of the season. Because remember, this is jobs for them. These guys are going to work like anybody was going to their 9-to-5, their 8-to-5. They are going to work to put something out there this season. And speaking of that, you have a guy like John Ross. He's been activated to the 53-man roster. Questions, you know, surrounding that a little bit too when you speak of the wide receiver room, and we'll get to AJ Green in just a moment because weekly we have to give that AJ Green update. I mean, we should pretty much get that sponsored. The way that goes when it comes to the never-ending, will AJ Green play or will he be out again? John Ross, activated. What will he bring to this offense besides the speed?
Well, he's obviously a vertical threat for the Bengals. He takes the top off of the defense. And when he left, he was a top five receiver in receiving yards. He opens things up for the Bengals. I mean, Joe Mixon said it best. I mean, he doesn't have to look at 8-9 men in the box when John Ross is on the field, because safeties and cornerbacks, obviously, they have to take account to with John Ross, his speed, his vertical ability. So he's another weapon out there for the Bengals, somebody who Andy Dalton can push the ball downfield to. And that just affects the running game and obviously the pass game, because the Bengals, they have desperately needed a deep threat. Tyler Boyd, he's a great wide receiver, but he's not a deep threat. Auden Tate, obviously, is not a deep threat. Alex Erickson, he's not a deep threat. The Bengals don't have a deep threat without John Ross and AJ Green.
I mean, John Ross, like, you know, I totally agree. You know, he keeps the defense honest. It helps with the running game, helps with the, you know, opens things up. But also, you know, in terms of, you know, with the improved, slightly improved offensive line play over the last few weeks, you know, the quarterback, in this case it'd be Andy Dalton, but the quarterback is able to kind of hold on to the ball a little bit more to kind of throw the ball down the field. Because basically they've turned into, I guess, a quick possession type of offense where you snap the ball, you get it out. We got to get it out because, you know, the offensive line isn't very good and we don't have speedy receivers. Now with John Ross, yes, you got a deep threat, but also as a, you know, you can use him as a decoy. The defense can't just stick a safety down the box. You know, they got to account for John Ross's speed. And so that enables, you know, a little bit more running room for Joe Mixon, and then takes the pressure off the offensive line even more because they can't, you know, bring as much pressure. The defenses can't bring as much pressure with an extra body. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, how John Ross performs.
Yeah, you kind of wish the Bengals would have their full complement of receivers to see how this 11 personnel offense would run with John Ross as a speedster, AJ Green as the clear-cut number one every down receiver, and then Tyler Boyd in the slot. But we haven't got that yet.
And I still want them to utilize the tight end more, and I felt like they did that a little bit in their win on Sunday because you have two healthy guys. When you look at last season, I mean, every single guy was pretty much injured offensively and defensively. And as you mentioned, like, look, they're without AJ Green, but at the same time, there's still a lot of healthy bodies out there, so it'll be interesting to see what Zach Taylor continues to do in the next four games. I actually want to go back to the offensive line a little bit. Kareem mentioned it and how they're playing at the moment. I talked with lead editor from PFF, and we'll have that interview at the end of the podcast, and he gets into more of the numbers when you look at the offensive line. Trey Hopkins has definitely been a highlight if you were to find anything on the offensive line all season long as a whole, but I actually talked to him back in September, and one of the things he was telling me, and I talked about the offensive line pieces because we joked about about it and said it's kind of like musical chairs. Zach Taylor has rotated his offensive line 6 different times. That is a lot in 12 games. And the thing about that, and Trey kind of talked about it, he said the biggest thing with offensive line and some of the changes from injuries, they were without Cordy Glenn at the time, he says it's chemistry. Mm-hmm. So they are starting to play a little bit better. I know they're still plugging different guys in there, but some of the guys are familiar faces. You get Cordy Glenn, 2 back-to-back starts, who's actually looked pretty good out there.
Yeah, continuity up front is vital, and the Bengals have not had that this season, partly due to injuries and partly just because inept play. Let's just keep it real. But as of late, Cordy Glenn, he has helped stabilize that left side of the offensive line. And then with Michael Jordan, the rookie, he's played pretty well. He's not playing like a rookie anymore. They only allowed Andy Dalton to get sacked 1 time, and he was only pressured 7 times in week 13. That was a pretty good performance by that offensive line. So overall, they have picked up their play. I would like to see them run block better. They're still miles away in that department, but overall, they have performed pretty well the last few games.
You know, also, Bobby Hart has cleaned up his play. You know, again, I'm down on the field, so I see that yellow flag.
You see all of it, you know where it's going.
And Bobby Hart has really cleaned up his play in terms of not being penalized the last few weeks. And also, you know, his in that last game, I don't believe he gave he surrendered any kind of pressure or anything like that either. So,
nope.
You know, Bobby Hart, you know, I got to give him a little credit too, because we've been hard on him. The fans have been hard on him. But, you know, with Cordy Glenn and Bobby Hart, you know, the 2 tackles playing pretty well, played well the last game. That's encouraging. And, you know, I just have a couple of questions over the last, you know, over the last 10 minutes of what we've been talking about. John Ross, is he entering his fourth year option? Is that right?
Is
that
next year? No.
Do they have to pick it up?
We'll see. Obviously, he was a first-round pick,
right,
but this is his third season.
So is next year is it 4 years?
Next year will be 4 years, and then he'll have his fifth-year option.
Following that is his fifth-year option. Okay, because I couldn't remember what year he was drafted. Okay, because that's going to, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's a little bit too far ahead, but, you know, you're going to have to think about picking that up in a couple of years.
Yeah, the Bengals have a lot of decisions coming
and
up.
And that's like, I imagine that's something like 12 mil for him. And then my other question or comment was, you know, regarding the offensive line, you know, Billy Price seems kind of like the lost man here. I mean,
injuries and just the way he's played.
I don't think that the coaching staff is particularly pleased or impressed. I don't know. I didn't know if you guys had any insight on Billy Price.
Well, he got demoted twice.
Yeah. At least.
He was supposed to be the starting center.
Right.
Demoted. And Trey Hopkins, obviously, is the starting center. And then left guard spot, he was projected to start and got beat out by Michael Jordan. Now, his back has been nicked up. But overall, the Bengals like what they have at center with Trey Hopkins. And Michael Jordan has picked up his play at that left guard position. So as for Billy Price, it's going to be interesting to see what the Bengals decide to do with him this offseason. If they decide to, you know, keep him on board, cut him, or see if there's any trade suitors.
I mean, in terms of, you know, relatively speaking, he's kind of, you know, affordable. You know, you can maybe keep him as a, you know, backup, some kind of swing position. I'm not sure. But I was just thinking, like, Billy Price, you know, we haven't seen much of him.
Yeah, he's handled the situation well, though. Inside, it's been frustrating for him to lose his spot and then lose his other spot. But he's been a good team player. He's still, you know, supportive of his teammates. He and Trey Hopkins, they're good friends, and he's been supportive of Michael Jordan at that left guard spot. So he's been a model teammate inside that locker room.
And I actually want to stick with the offensive line right now. And I know the answer that the head coach, Zach Taylor, was going to give us on Tuesday when we talked to him, when I talked about pretty much a good problem I feel they could have going into the offseason at left tackle. If Cordy Glenn continues to finish the season out strong, you have a rookie in Jonah Williams, who technically hasn't been officially shut down, but more than likely will be until next season. That can be interesting when you look at the left tackle position, if you have a guy continuing to play strong.
You're going to start Jonah Williams.
Yeah, Jonah Williams.
But what you could do with Cordy Glenn.
Right, you can go ahead, Tyler.
Yeah, you can move him. He was projected to play left guard when they thought that Jonah Williams was going to be healthy. If he does not play left guard, then maybe you can try to have a competition out there at right tackle.
Yeah.
But yes, as you were trying to say, it is a good problem to have, you know, able bodies out there, especially on that offensive line, because at the beginning of the season, they were awful, and now they've picked up play. And maybe, just maybe, that can be an area of strength next year,
That's
dare I say.
That's crazy to think about. It's been a long road for that offensive line.
Have things smoothed over with Cordy Glenn?
I think they've moved on.
I just think with all the stuff that went on with Cordy Glenn this year, and then, you know, bringing him back, I don't know. It just seems to me, you know, Jim Turner and Cordy Glenn aren't necessarily seeing eye to eye, and Zach Taylor and Jim Turner are close, and I don't know if it's a thing that, you know, it's either him or me. I don't know. I'm just saying.
Fences have been mended, but I will say this: the fence isn't thick at all.
Yeah,
it's like see-through kind of.
Yeah.
And so
the fence isn't strong. It is still a little bit unstable. You know, if you poke it a little hard, it might fall down.
Right. So I think maybe Cordy. I mean, you know, a left tackle should be able to play right tackle, right? So
yes. Move
him over to right tackle. I mean, that'd be great. And then you have Jonah Williams there. Really, I think the only question on the offensive line going forward is was it the left guard position?
Well, you have Michael Jordan right mm-hmm. there.
But
and
still not a great.
Or is it the right guard? I can't remember one of the guard positions. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm a little skeptical about the Cordy Glenn situation.
Yeah, and as you should be, as everybody is.
It's going to be one of the most interesting off-seasons. I know they have 4 games left to play, and we'll get into all the off-season moves and how things change over the next couple months. But, man, that off-season, if you have the number one draft pick, some of the other moves that you can make offensively and – you know, speaking of it.
Well, your dream said they're going to
get a
draft a linebacker.
Fans would kill me if that dream came true. I actually want to go back to the wide receiver room because, you know, every week it's like another storyline, same thing. AJ Green, is he going to play? Is he not? People get mad when I tweet out, you know, or retweet that he's not going to practice this week or he's not going to play. They want news when he is going to play. People want him shut down for the season. What's the point? The season is pretty much over. They're 1-11. What in the world do you do with A.J. Green? Because I'm not even counting this week. You have 3 games left with him.
Well, yeah. I mean, I asked Zach Taylor that specific question on our podcast earlier this week, and he remains hopeful that Green will play this season. He's already going to be out this week. I don't envision him playing Stephon Gilmore and the New England Patriots next week. So then you only have the Miami Dolphins, and then you have the Cleveland Browns again. So the last 2 games of the season, maybe. It's getting more and more doubtful that A.J. Green is going to play this season, but they're still holding out hope. The jury is still out. It's very questionable at best if he plays this season. And as I said, he's not playing this week. I highly doubt he plays next week against the New England Patriots. So then you only have 2 games left.
Kareem, what if he got paid? What if he would have been paid before the season started? Do you think he would be coming back even if he wasn't 100%?
That's a tough hypothetical question.
I'm just putting that out there.
No, I don't think he would. If he got paid and he's not 100%, he wouldn't be playing, in my opinion, because I think the team would be like, we just paid this guy and he's not 100%. We don't want to re-aggravate any injuries. I think the whole A.J. Green, I've said it, you know, we've talked about it. I always thought he should play a little bit because if he wants to get a free agent contract, they need to show something on film. Same with, you know, for the Cincinnati Bengals. If they want to pay him, they got to see a little bit. But I think my position has changed a little bit on this. I always thought he was going to play. It didn't seem like A.J. Green was the kind of guy to be like, no, I'm not playing this year. But I guess that's the case. I don't know. I don't want to put out any bad information or misinformation out there. But I guess if you are the Bengals with no leverage anymore, you're like, okay, shut him down. We're going to pay him anyway. Let's not re-aggravate any injuries, right? We're going to pay him anyway. And then for A.J. Green, it's like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to get paid either way. Maybe I shouldn't play at all. You know, my position has changed from when, well, let me see something on tape so we can pay you, whether it's the Bengals or the rest of the league, to, well, the Bengals have no leverage. we're going to pay him anyway. We know AJ Green. We want to keep him here. Let's not, you know, we're 1-11. Let's not put him on the field to hurt him. So the AJ Green situation, I'm kind of befuddled and baffled, really. I have no idea what's going on. to be honest,
I don't think anybody does, actually.
And I think spending, I know the fans are getting a little irritated about, the updates and the lack of updates, really, day to day. And so I just think we just have to wait and just let it play out, and then we'll report what happens. But in terms of, I think even the interest among the fans of whether AJ Green is going to play or not, I think that has dipped. I don't think they care whether he's going to play or not. I don't know. From what I've seen and who I've talked to, I don't know.
I'm going to stick with the 2011 draft class right now. What if Andy Dalton, and I personally think that they move on and they hopefully get a quarterback in the first round, and they're probably going to have the first pick, and I think they go Joe Burrow. But
not what your dream said.
But what if Andy Dalton finishes the season strong? Is that just tape for another team?
Yeah, I mean, you know what you have in Andy Dalton already. You have 9 years of tape, and at this point, it's time to move on. The writing is on the wall. I can see the Bengals actually having Andy Dalton back next year and him being a bridge quarterback for Joe Burrow or Tua. I'm not reporting that as official or anything, but I would not be surprised if that happened. But if you're going to have a top pick in the draft, you need to go ahead and draft your next franchise quarterback. And people within the organization have told me that they want to draft a quarterback early in the draft.
Burrow is a stud, right? And so, every once in a while you get a clear stud quarterback that is a franchise NFL quarterback.
From Ohio, too.
From Ohio, right? So, you think about that, most recently in Bengals history was Carson Palmer, right? Carson is clear. This guy's a number one. We're going to take him. He's a franchise quarterback. When it's that clear, you take him, right? And I think it's really clear with Joe and for Tua even. But let's say there wasn't a clear quarterback in the draft. I think the Bengals would totally retain Andy Dalton and continue him to be the starter. Now, in terms of the rest of the league, plenty of teams need a competent, strong, fine quarterback. And
Chicago Bears.
Even, the Redskins, they have Dwayne Haskins. I can see, a bridge situation, right?
Yeah.
There's plenty of NFL teams that need the Jacksonville.
There are a lot of teams.
Right, there are a lot of teams.
That can use an Andy Dalton.
Yeah, so, mm-hmm. Obviously the Bears really come to mind. They have a pretty strong roster overall, but, the quarterback is not,
Tampa Bay.
Right, Tampa. Yeah, so, I think for Andy, he's going to be just fine. But I also want to say that the quarterback position is not the top priority in terms of what this team needs, in my opinion. There are the quarterback position is not the main problem.
It's not.
So let's say, again, you don't have the clear franchise quarterback in the draft and you retain Andy, you go and get, linebackers, defense, edge rusher, what I'm saying? Offense, obviously more offensive linemen, what I mean? So, but in this case, Joe is clear. It's clear that he's the best and he's a franchise quarterback. You take him when it's clear. But sometimes in some drafts, it's kind of, blurry or a lot of gray. You don't know if this quarterback, in that situation, don't take a quarterback and keep your professional quarterback in Andy Dalton. So I think they take Joe because it's just so obvious to do so.
All right. Well, we have a couple months and about four games to go before we get into all those offseason moves. But I'm just saying, what if Andy Dalton plays pretty well? So it'll be interesting as the season goes on. Guys, we'll move on to see if the Bengals will stay undefeated in December as they travel up I-71 northbound to take on the Cleveland Browns. The Cleveland Browns, I don't even know what to think of them this season. They're so up and down the way they played. They're not disciplined. I actually think the Bengals get win number two. I know people aren't huge fans of them winning any more games. They wanted that one, but that's about it. I actually think that they get a dub in a touchdown winning game in the fourth quarter. I'm going to go 17-13.
Optimistic Lindsay.
I don't know. I mean, I just, the way that Browns are so up and down, I don't know what to think of them.
The Browns aren't a bad team. They're a mess.
That's what it is.
Right? Mm-hmm. Like, the Bengals are a bad team. Okay. They're not, and they kind of have some messy issues, but the Browns are a mess. They have all this talent. They have all these players, but they just, it's a mess. So, and I think that the Andy Dalton is a better quarterback than Baker Mayfield, and I think Zach Taylor is a better coach than Freddie Kitchens. So I am also taking the Bengals to take a win.
Whoa, undefeated in December, the Cincinnati Bengals.
Because I think, again, as I said many times to you guys, in person, nobody remembers 1-15, 2-14. So I'm really, as a Cincinnati and as a follower of the Bengals, I'm glad that they're not going to go 0-16. And I do want a high draft pick. I do want a quarterback as well. So two wins, I'm cool. One against the Browns. Take one from the Browns. Got two wins. That's cool, right? and I think the Bengals get it done. I think it's going to be 21-14.
We'll see. The reason why I caution people who are jumping on the Browns Super Bowl bandwagon at the beginning of the season is because it's a whole lot different playing football games with expectations and you got a target on your back. And the Browns are witnessing that firsthand. And teams have more tape on Baker Mayfield, and he's regressed as a result. He already has 14 interceptions. He had 14 all last season. His completion percentage is down. And, I mean, he has the worst passer rating for a quarterback with at least 7 starts. So Baker Mayfield has regressed. That defense has regressed. They're obviously not going to be with their best overall player, and that's going to hurt them as well. But with all that said, the Browns are still a top 10 rushing team in the NFL, and the Bengals, we have seen, they cannot stop the run.
That's right.
And in Cleveland, it's probably going to be cold. There might be some rain. I haven't checked the weather, so I'm not being a meteorologist here. But I just think the Browns' running game is going to be a little bit too much for the Bengals to handle. And I have the Browns winning 24-20. But since optimistic Lindsay is over here shaking her head at me.
No, I'm telling you it's going to be 49 degrees, and that's pretty warm in Cleveland in December. So.
I do think they're going to split the season series. So I do believe the Bengals will win that Week 17 game at Paul Brown Stadium. So I think it's going to be a split.
Ending the season on a high note in 2019, Kareem and I are taking the dub, and Tyler says an L for the Cincinnati Bengals. The good news, we'll have it covered because the three of us are traveling up I-71, and we will have a post-game, pre-game. Also, photo gallery from my guy, Kareem Elgazar, so make sure you check that out. But next, let's hear from the other side.
So we've had a lot of special guests on this podcast. I mean, Zach Taylor was on earlier in the week. But this guest right here, he is special to me as well because Nick and I go way back. Nick is a writer for NFL.com. He used to actually cover the Cleveland Browns, and he's from Northeast Ohio. And I say Nick and I go back. I mean, he's even been to one of my birthday parties in Vegas. Now, I won't say what happened in Vegas. Nick might not even remember everything that happened in Vegas, but let's welcome in Nick Shook of NFL.com. Hey, Nick, how you doing?
I'm great, Tyler. Thanks for having me on.
So will you be at the game this weekend? I know you used to cover the Browns, and now you're at NFL.com. Will you be at the game?
No, I'll actually be working from a different location, doing a few games since we have so many games in the 1 o'clock. We got 9 1 o'clock games this week, so unfortunately I won't be able to have my entire focus trained on just the Browns game. So I won't get to see you in the press box, but it's all good.
Well, I know you are naturally a Browns fan, and I did not pick the Browns to have a good season. I did not hop on that train that everybody was hopping on at the beginning of the year. You guys have obviously underachieved this season. From your vantage point, what's up with your Cleveland Browns?
First I'd like to exclude myself from having preseason predictions because at the time I was a team employee, so I could only go one way there. But there's been a variety of issues, I think. You have a lot of new pieces with that team. and they're being managed by a first-time head coach who was hired because he had a good rapport with a second-year quarterback and demonstrated that they could run an offense together well in the second half of an otherwise lost season last year. So I think there was a lot of instability going into the season, a lot of uncertainty, and a lot of unproven pieces, and I don't think they've come together and in the amount of time necessary to win enough games to make the playoffs. And you know how this NFL is. If you don't win games quickly, your time and the ownership's patience usually runs out. So that's why we're hearing about asking questions about whether Freddie Kitchens has his job long term or not, is because look, they didn't have much time to get it together, and they didn't start fast out of the gate, and they've been climbing uphill ever since. And unfortunately, there's an old character in mythology, Sisyphus, who pushes a boulder up a hill eternally and never gets to the top. And sometimes that's what this Browns season feels like for these guys.
Well, you mentioned Freddie Kitchens. Is he the answer in Cleveland? Are Cleveland fans sold on him?
I would say Cleveland fans are not sold on him based on the reaction the last few weeks. But then again, it is the nature of almost any fan and any fan base to turn on the head coach first, because that's the easiest job to fire. They're under contract, but they're quickly fired. In this town, they're fired quickly, probably faster than any other town in the NFL. So I don't think they've been fans of him ever since he lost in week one, to be honest with you. They did go on a nice winning streak before losing the Steelers last week, but last week was probably the base game for this franchise in the last 10 years, and they did not perform up to par, especially after taking an early lead. And I think that, unfortunately reflects poorly on the head coach. Do I like him? Yeah, I like him, both as a person and as a coach. I think that some players really do like him, but I just think he was in a really tough spot to begin with, going into a locker room with all these new pieces and a lot of talent, and he himself trying to figure out how to be a head coach basically on the fly. And for him to be 5-7 with this talent, I think it probably falls right in line with what you should expect from a rookie head coach. It's just that with the talent they have on the roster, you expect them to win more games. So long term, I don't know if he's going to be the answer. We'll see what these final 4 weeks really produce. I mean, the Browns should win 3 of these 4 games. I see them losing to Baltimore, but they should win the other 3 games. And if he wins 3 more games, they go 8-8. I could see him coming back. But if they don't win all 3 out of those 4 games, then I could see him very easily being fired and replaced by maybe a veteran coach, like a guy who got fired this week in Ron Rivera, for example. So to give you the convoluted answer, I don't think he's the guy long term, but I do like him, and I think that he could make a good head coach elsewhere if you give him a longer rope. He just doesn't have that runway here.
Interesting you say that. I have the Browns losing to Baltimore and then losing the season finale versus the Bengals at Paul Brown Stadium. But on the offensive side of the football, there's obviously a lot of talent there. Baker Mayfield has regressed, but what's up with the whole situation with Odell Beckham? It just seems like it has not worked in Cleveland.
So, okay, well, let me first address the Baker Mayfield point, because he had regressed in the first part of the season, but I would say in the last 5 games, he's actually improved and played pretty good football. Last week was kind of in between, but I mean, he had a 7-0 touchdown interception ratio, and he'd been playing pretty good football. I think it's one of those things where you're in your second year and you got to get comfortable in a slightly newer offense, and now the entire league has a book on you, so you got to adjust to that as well. But the Odell thing, I think, is just more a matter of, he's new, and again, all these new guys there. I mean, they just didn't gel. I mean, they have not come together in the time that you need them to come together to be a good football team. And I think if we go back and look at a lot of teams with talent that had a new head coach, I think you would find that more often than not, they experienced similar struggles. And the Odell thing, though, is frustrating, because this is a guy who should get 10, 12 targets a game, and he doesn't. And he comes away with, less than 50 receiving yards at least a few times this year. And it's as frustrating for him as it is for Browns fans who watch, because you just know what he's capable of doing. But I think the most notable example was when the Browns lost to Denver a few weeks ago, because they don't get Odell involved in most of the game. And then all of a sudden, when they're desperate, they throw in the ball twice on one drive, and he gets right down the field, and they pick up a ton of yards. And it's like, well, why don't you do this earlier? And that's been the big mystery for this team this entire season. And I think ultimately, if they do get rid of Freddie Kitchens, I think that would be a big part of his downfall, is the fact that he just hasn't utilized his weapons. Now, conversely, Jarvis Landry has had a very good year. And some of that's because defenses are paying attention to Odell Beckham, and they're giving Jarvis Landry a little bit more space to work, but also because Baker Mayfield has a demonstrated relationship with Jarvis Landry and an understanding on the field that just hasn't built yet with Odell. And I think that shows more than anything.
Okay. Well, good answer. Good answers. Before I get you out of here, you already said the Browns are going to win this weekend. What's your score prediction?
Well, it depends. Are the Bengals going to get any stops? I mean,
the defense has played pretty well as of late. They've only allowed one touchdown in the last 10 quarters.
Right. So if that's the case, then I'm going to say it's a pretty low-scoring affair. Then again, the Browns have this thing where every time they play at home, in almost every game they've played at home this season, if they get the ball first or the first time they get the ball, whether it's receiving or they defer, they go right down the field and score a touchdown. I mean, it happens every week, and then they don't do it again for the rest of the game.
The Bengals don't do that.
they just have a great pregame script, and then they go completely off the rails after that. So I'm going to say that the Browns come away with a, let's go with a 21-10 win.
10 points.
Yeah, I believe in Andy Dalton more than I ever believed in Ryan Finley, but I still think it's Andy Dalton without much to do at receiver. Although John Ross, yeah, maybe he does something. Who knows? He's been gone for the majority of the season.
Yeah, well, we will all see this weekend. Nick, thanks for coming on today's podcast.
Hey, Tyler, anytime. Thanks.
All right, next we'll hear from lead editor from PFF, Austin Gale. We're coming off a win. You know what? It felt like a broken record for 11 straight weeks, but right now the Bengals have their first win in 2019 under Zach Taylor, and I'm going to go to some of the positives when you look at the offense, and I'll go straight to the offensive line right now. They didn't look that bad, and Cordy Glenn's been starting at left tackle for back-to-back weeks.
No, not at all. Cordy Glenn looked very good, specifically in pass protection. I think that's where I was most impressed. Still struggling a bit as a run blocker, but I think as he gets older, I think that's what you're going to start to see from him, struggling to get those reach blocks and things like that, especially with the zone scheme they do run in Cincinnati. But outside of that, I think the Cincinnati Bengals really, you know, stepped up. I think the offensive line stepped up in a big way. The Jets' defensive front isn't anything special, but you have to do it against the bad teams before you do it against the good teams. And I think the Cincinnati Bengals really showed out in the trenches. I also was impressed with Auden Tate. Auden Tate had a good day as well.
Auden Tate definitely stepping up for this team. I think a bright spot when you look at this season. What does he bring to this offense?
You know, the road to the NFL and a long-term career as a starter in the NFL for Auden Tate was always going to be a long one, largely because he's a bigger receiver that's still pretty slow. Ran a 4.68 coming out of college at Florida State. And I think with that being said, he's going to struggle to create separation with a lack of deep speed and short area quickness. But what he's made a living off of is these contested catches, using his body well, tracking the body well, and getting better from a drop standpoint. Drops have been a little bit of a concern here and there, but he's getting better down the stretch. And if he's going to stay, you know, a starter in this league, I think he's showing a lot of the signs to do so with this contested catchability and him using his body very well.
We'll stay with wide receivers right now because the Bengals activated John Ross. He is returning in 2019. Some would say, why would you put him back out there, an injury-prone wide receiver? But what does he add to this offense?
Speed. I mean, that's what John Ross adds to any offense. He's a very fast receiver. I think a big reason they're doing this too is because he doesn't have a lot of reps. I mean, John Ross has battled injuries his entire career. And with that being said, even in a season where the Cincinnati Bengals aren't making a push for the playoffs anytime soon, they still need to see him play football. I think a ton of teams are still evaluating John Ross, I think, to know how he fits into the future for the Cincinnati Bengals. I think this is an opportunity for him to prove himself, an opportunity for him to show that he can create separation, be a good receiver in this offense.
We'll go to the guy who's thrown him the ball. Andy Dalton will get his second start after being benched for 3 straight weeks to Ryan Finley. How did he look on Sunday?
Yeah, grade didn't come out great. He didn't earn over a 70.0 PFF passing grade, and that's largely because of depth of the ball. He only threw 3 passes of 20-plus air yards and didn't complete any of them. At the 10 to 19-yard level, though, he played very well. 8 of 13 passes, looked very good in that range. That's something that they wanted Ryan Finley to do, but he struggled to keep the offense on schedule. I think that's what I was most impressed with Andy Dalton. He kept the offense on schedule. The game was not too big for him, wasn't too fast for him, and he was able to kind of put things where they needed to be. While with Ryan Finley, he was battling a lot of different things. You know, pressure, he didn't handle pressure very very well, still learning the offense, still learning the NFL. Andy Dalton looked like a seasoned vet because he is one. I think he performed above expectation for the Cincinnati team.
We'll go to the other side because I think for three straight weeks, the defense has definitely stepped up. When you have your superstars, and before the season started, I definitely thought the Bengals front and that line was going to be one of their strengths on the defensive side. And we saw that on Sunday. Carlos Dunlap with three sacks.
11 total pressures, too. That's insane. In the previous three games combined, he didn't have 11 total pressures. This game, 11 pressures against the New York Jets. It was very, very impressed. He was going against some bad offensive tackles against the New York Jets, Chuma Odoga and Kelvin Beachum, but he performed very well. And I think the Jets did a very bad job scheming away from him. They did not do a good enough job. As soon as he kind of pronounced himself as a threat, you expected Adam Gase and company to start to move things away from him because he was obviously beating up, you know, the Jets' offensive tackles, but he continued to dominate. This was a very impressive performance for the season bet.
I've hammered the secondary pretty much all season because you have guys like William Jackson III and Jesse Bates who have struggled on the defensive side, but things are looking a little up on that side.
Yeah, I would say so. I think Jesse Bates, even in that Oakland game, I think I was very impressed. I was talking to Solomon Wilcott, a colleague at PFF now. He was saying Rod Woodson told Jesse Bates that, hey, Derek Carr pats the ball before he throws, and he had an interception in that game. I think Jesse Bates is getting better from an instinctual standpoint, learning the game, gaining experience. And as for William Jackson, the 2017 season that was seeming more distant as we keep going forward, but I still think he has all the tools to play well, especially when the pass rush is hitting home. When the pass rush is hitting home and Carlos Dunlap is recording 11 pressures, it makes the secondary's job that much easier.
They cut Preston Brown a couple weeks ago, and the linebacker room looked like it needed some help. Jermaine Pratt, a rookie out there, finally getting some reps, and it doesn't hurt when you're having the season like the Bengals are doing. How's the linebacker room look?
Still not great. I mean, Jermaine Pratt getting reps, I think from a rookie, you need to get him that experience, but I still think they need a significant injection of talent at that position, specifically speed. They need athleticism and speed at that position. Gone are the days of two-down linebackers that are 250, 260-plus pounds. You need guys that are fast, like Devin Bush, Devin White, two of the big-name linebackers drafted this recently, and I think with the Cincinnati Bengals, that's a position they need to look to upgrade this offseason.
The Bengals will see the Cleveland Browns this weekend for the first time. They are so up and down right now. Yeah, they're without Myles Garrett, and that's going to hurt you on the defensive side, but have you been surprised with the roller coaster this season the Cleveland Browns are having?
Absolutely. I think everyone's surprised. I mean, there were high expectations for this Cleveland Browns team. There were high expectations for Odell Beckham Jr., Baker Mayfield, Freddie Kitchens, and all of those kind of guys have really underwhelmed. Freddie Kitchens. I think there are significant concerns with the offensive scheme. I think they're going away from things they maybe shouldn't have and maybe trying to push things that they probably shouldn't have. And with Baker Mayfield, the biggest thing with him is at Oklahoma, a very accurate quarterback. It's why he graded so well at PFF. And even in his rookie year, he's one of the most accurate quarterbacks in the NFL. But this year, he's taken a significant step back. And I'm not really sure what that's a product of, because when we see here at PFF, a very stable metric is quarterback accuracy. But Baker Mayfield taking a step back there has been a huge problem. And Odell Beckham Jr., I mean, you really wish he was going to have a better year. You thought he was, but he's really struggling in that offense and with Baker Mayfield's struggles as well.
I'm just going to go ahead and say it. Ron Rivera released today from the Carolina Panthers. He is going to be the Cleveland Browns' next head coach.
I think that's a bold call. I mean, Ron Rivera, very defensive-minded. Defensive-minded head coaches don't get hired as often as offensive-minded do, but I think I could see Ron Rivera maybe stepping down a bit, going defensive coordinator somewhere. I think the Eagles could make sense. There are teams that could use Ron Rivera's defensive mind. Get him out of the head coaching experience. Don't let him manage players and all the things like that. Get him coaching the defense.
I'm going to go back to the AFC North really quick because I put him in the Super Bowl a couple weeks ago. I said pencil. You can erase with pencil, but I'm putting the Baltimore Ravens in there. They just look dominant offensively and defensively. Have you been impressed?
Absolutely. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens are arguably the best team in football. I think the New England Patriots hanging on by a thread there, maybe, but I think the Baltimore Ravens are overtaking them. They're playing very good football. The offense looks nearly unstoppable against any defense. Lamar Jackson, the hardest man to tackle in football. And defensively, the Baltimore Ravens are stepping up. Pass rush is hitting home. Marcus Peters taking a step forward, Marlon Humphrey, Jimmy Smith. They are loaded across the board. And with that being said, they have a really good culture in Baltimore, too. I think you see that on the broadcast film. You see that with the players and how they interact. And I think that's very important for a team that's going to go the distance, because you could tell they can rally through adversity and really beat this thing down. I think the Baltimore Ravens, I like them as a Super Bowl favorite.
And we'll get a look at the last team in the AFC North. Not the last place team, but when you look at how they're playing right now, credit to Mike Tomlin. Everybody's giving him Coach of the Year, even though they wanted him out to begin the season and in the offseason. Mike Tomlin's doing a heck of a job when you look at that offense.
Oh, 100%. With Devlin Duck Hodges, they're doing a very good job. James Washington, James Washington as well, the second-year Oklahoma State receiver, has taken a step forward. They're targeting him more. He's bringing in contested catches. Mason Rudolph, not the answer, obviously, but I think Devlin Duck Hodges is earning himself at least a backup spot in the NFL when Ben Roethlisberger comes back.
Yep, AFC North, it's been fun to watch. A little bit of a soap opera. Of course, the Bengals are in last place before they take on the Cleveland Browns this Sunday. Thank you so much, Austin.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us on another BBP. I'm Lindsay Patterson, Tyler Dragon Cream Elgazar. As I mentioned, we'll have everything covered when the Bengals take on the Cleveland Browns for the first time this season over on Cincinnati.com.